We'll figure out, we'll figure out a name for this, and you can figure it out. So, all right.
We're going to just ask for that recording of the screaming. That's
give
all.
Us that one.
Yeah. Laurie would love to have that. Oh, yes. You could wake up to that every morning.
I might be asked to leave again. I don't know. So I'm not willing to chance it. You want to kick us off?
Kick us off.
Okay, so we're going to talk about 10, 11, maybe 12. We'll see how all that wanders through here. We'll just see. We don't really even know about this one. So
yeah, we don't.
We really don't know about this. Yeah. So. Okay, so the 10th step talks about, there's some things, profound things that when I had the implosion of self and kind of 13 years ago, there were some profound things happened to me when I went back through the book. And one of them was in step 10. Mm. one of them was step 10, we said, you know, continue to take personal inventory. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. So now we've come somewhere else. Book talks about two fellowships here, back, and there is a solution that gives us a glimpse of the fellowship. Well, here we'll give you a glimpse of the fellowship, what it's going to be like. You know, they don't really talk about the fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous till the last chapter, till the vision for you. You ever notice that? You ever wonder why that is? You ever wonder why? Why don't they talk about the fellowship up front? Why don't we talk about it? Because for the reason, back in the old days, you didn't even get to go to AA meeting till you took the steps. They sponsored you into the meeting. This is Joey. I'm sponsoring him into the meeting. He's taking the steps. I'm bringing him in. They didn't even take you there. If they took you to the hospital, you were responsible for the bill. You were. They made you responsible. You might make the knucklehead you took, but you were responsible for it. A lot of things different that happened back before the book was published, right? But the fellowship is not really talked about until we get to a vision for you. But here it talks about we enter the world of the Spirit. It's a different place for people like us. It's a place that we don't normally dwell before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we'll give some lip service to religious stuff, but we don't really enter the world of the Spirit. And then it says our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And it gives us this this little 3 or 4 sentences here about how we grow in understanding and effectiveness. And then the last line of this paragraph says, love and tolerance of others is our code. And so when I read this paragraph and the mechanics of step 10, pretty clear, right? I got to watch. What am I watching for? Selfishness, honesty, resentment, and fear. Watch. That's my job. Watch. If I'm watching for that stuff, where am I? In the moment. I can only see these things in the moment, right? 10, 11, 12 are about keeping me grounded in the present. That's why they're so important to us. And when I was new sober, I tried to live on 1 through 9. I gave lip service to 10, 11, 12. I look at people around me in AA, and I do this based on what they come and say to me. And my experience is that about 7 to 10 or 11 or 15 years, they have this disruption of life. They're going, I'm not happy in AA anymore. They're not doing it right. They're doing all the stuff. You know, they're just starting to pick AA apart, everything about it apart. And so my question always is, hey, tell me what your 10-11 practice is. And it's always the same answer. None. Hmm. None. Well, I pray. They just throw that in as a kind of a throwaway. Well, I pray, because they're afraid they'll flunk if they don't say that, I think. I'm not sure. I pray. Is this pass, fail? Am I good? But generally, they're just giving lip service to 10, 11, 12. And I know that because that's what I used to do. But so the mechanics of 10 are watch, pray, discuss, amend if necessary, and return to somebody I can help. The mechanics is easy, simple. It's spelled out for us here. But when I go to 10-step meetings or a meeting where they're talking about the 10-step, you know what I hear about when I go to those meetings? Failure of step 10, making amends. And I'm not saying that's not a part of the step. It certainly is. That's a failure of the 10th step. I have failed, and it gives me the out, right? I get a get-out-of-jail-free card in step 10. If I don't do, if I'm not practicing step 10, that's what happens. I got to go make amends. If I'm not practicing step 10, there's a release valve that gets me out, and that's how I get to go make amends. But if I'm doing what it asks me to do, watch, pray, discuss, turn, if I'm doing those things, I'm less likely to chirp at somebody. I'm less likely to be selfish. I'm less likely to be resentful. And I can get resentful. I can get resentful off things that never happened. This ever happened to any of you people? Fancied or real? I'll give you an example. I'm walking down the street. I'm in a hurry. I'm going somewhere. I see George. George is coming at me. He's in a hurry. I'm on my way to court. I'm pretty busy. He's busy. He's going somewhere. He comes back. He goes, "Hey, Cliff, how you doing? Hey, nice tie." And he just keeps on going. And in my mind, suddenly I think, nice tie? What the hell did he mean by that? And I think George is giving me a slight. I think he's giving me a hip check, you know? And so I spend the next 3 days plotting George's death. That's what I know. Brainstorm. Brainstorm, right? So and then I come up with 842 scenarios of the next time I see George. He's going to say this, and I'm going to say that. But if it's going to be this way, so I come up with all these scenarios. And I do that for 3 days. Consumes me. And then I see George. Here he comes. I'm ready. I'm ready. I got 842 scenarios. I'm ready. I've practiced them. I've rehearsed them for 3 days, for God's sake. And George comes up to me and says, "Hey, I'm glad I get to see you again. You know, my brother loves your ties. Every time you're around, he talks about how great your ties are. And that one you had on the day was exceptional. I know he'd like that. Where did you get that?" "Well, I got nothing for that. I mean, I don't have anything for that, you know. I got nothing for that. But I've wasted 3 days. I've wasted 3 days." And the deal is when George comes down the street and he says, "Hey, nice tie," and I think, what does he mean by that? I immediately begin to pray, "God help me. God help me." And I call my sponsor and I say, "Bob, George was coming down the street the other day and he said, nice tie. And I know that was a slight." And he'll say, "Oh, you're a mind reader now, are you? You are, you're a mind reader now. Where, how's that crystal ball and turban going?" And I remember, oh yeah, that's what, because I forget. Anybody here got a Teflon brain besides me? Quicker forgetter. Forget. Be real spiritual in my AA meeting. Go down the street, lose it all. And so I remember, oh yeah, he's probably just being nice to me. Well, I'll tell you what, Cliff. Why don't you call up Joe and see how he's doing? He's a bad alcoholic. You probably need to talk to him. Turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Just not that Joe needs my help, but he just wants me to call Joe to get out of me. And I call Joe and we talk and I'm asking Joe how he's doing. He asked me how I'm going. I'm doing great because I'm talking to you. And it's all done in 5 minutes versus 3 days. But I can get in these brainstorms. I can get caught up in that. And I may not harm anybody but in my head. But I'm wasting time. I've caught up in this turbulence in my head. You know, I know when I've made a mistake. Today I know. When it comes out of my mouth, I know. This is going to leave a mark because I'm going to have to make amends, right? I know when it comes out. And the deal about that is it doesn't come out as often anymore. When I'm new sober, boom, I'm on point quick. But as I've been here a while, I've learned the value of the pause, that I just need to listen and maybe I don't need to say anything. Not everything everybody says requires a response by me. I may not even need to say anything. I may just let it float by, and if I just let it float by, I'm not in a tennis match. It just goes by. But it says here in the book, it says my next function, what I'm supposed to be doing next is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And how do I do that? Love and tolerance of others is my code. If I'm not loving and tolerating you people, there's no way I can grow in my understanding and effectiveness. If I'm not trying to see things, you know, back in step 4, it talks about We look at the list from an entirely different point of view, from an entirely different perspective, from an entirely different angle. We look at that person as maybe they're a sick person. So I begin to live my life trying to say, how can I love, comfort, and understand these people I'm coming in contact with? Versus, I need you to love, comfort, and understand me. Because my whole life I've gone trying to get, and now what am I bringing to the table? That's what I love about Don in his book, Stumbling in the Right Directions. And this is, I'm not trying to sell you guys anything. Don gives me practical experience on how to put principles like this into play in my life. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah.
How to give this practical application to how do I love and tolerate people? How do I grow in understanding and effectiveness? And this book gives us these 13 non-drinking promises. It says, you know, if we begin to live this way of life, these 13 non-drinking promises begin to come true for us in our life. And one of my favorite one is that the problem has been removed. What a great thing that is. That hamster wheel of the obsession, you know, it's gone. The restless, irritable, discontented of my life, for the most part, is gone. I'm not telling you it never comes, but for the most part, it's gone. And if I got it, it's low grade. It's low grade because I'm feeling sorry for myself, right? I'm absorbed in self-pity some way. It's very low grade if I have any restless, irritable, discontent. It certainly doesn't rise to the level that the obsession kicks in, I need a drink. Doesn't rhyme. It says the problem's been removed. The fourth step says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten up mentally and physically. That's all we treat here. We don't treat the physical allergy. I'm not a doctor. You come to me and say, hey, I've got this allergy to alcohol. I go, well, that's pretty bad. I can't do nothing for that, right? Don't drink. That's what I can tell you about that. Don't drink. And then you come to me and say, well, I've got this obsession in mind. That's all I think about. I think about drinking all the time. I go, well, don't think about that. That's all I got for that, right? Don't think about that. Think about something else. Because I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a I'm not a counselor. I can't help you with that. But if you come and say, man, I'm just restless, irritable, discontent. Oh, we got a solution for that. Back in the old days, they used to call that soul surgery. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous does, soul surgery. We operate on the restless, irritable, discontentedness of our lives. We do that through a process of steps, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We remove all that stuff, download it, get rid of it, whatever, make amends, clean up the wreckage, try to have contact, look at our defects, ask God for help, try to take action to live a principled kind of life. We begin to take those actions. What happens is I become a better person. I start acting better. You know what happens? I start thinking better. You know that old deal? You can't think your way into right action. I'm just going to think about it, which is like throwing more problem at the problem, right? Problem centers in my mind. I'm just going to think about this. That's a disaster area for a guy like that. That's a toxic dump. I mean, I can't outthink the problem. I can't get ahead of the curve here. So I got to take actions contrary to I think, feel, and believe. That's never going to work. I'll try it, but it's never going to work. And it always works. If I take action to contrary to I think, feel, and believe, it begins to work. These 13 non-drinking promises begin to come true in my life. The problem becomes removed because I've done that soul surgery, and now the deal is I've got to keep it removed. I've got to keep restless, irritable, discontented out of my life. How do I do that? I have to do what this paragraph talks about. Love and tolerance of others. I've got to listen to you. I got to find compassion for you. To learn to love you. I have to learn to... Listen, it's easy to love you guys this weekend. Just hanging out with you guys, all like-minded, all seekers, everybody moving in the right direction. Go to a meeting where somebody says, all you got to do is don't drink and go to meetings. Whoa! The hackles come up. I hate that guy. That's the guy that I'm here for. That's the guy this is talking about. This is the person I need to be loving and tolerating. That's the guy I got to go up to and be kind and loving to. That's the guy I was talking about in order for me to grow in my understanding of effectiveness. That's the guy I've got to love and tolerate. Spiritual sandpaper. You know, just grinding away on me. Those people that drone on and on and on in meetings, the on and oners, right? The ones that come and says, well, I'm not on that step, but I'm going to talk about it. Okay. All right. Or these people. You know, I really don't have much to say. Jesus, buckle up. We're here for 30 minutes. You know, that guy, right? Hang on. We're going to go here. That's right. I'm going to keep this short. Oh, my God. I'll take a nap. Call me when he's done, right? And I can emote body language that it's not what I say. It's all this. I'm like, not giving a thought about the newcomer sitting right here. What am I telling that guy about that guy? You know, my body language, what does it say? His whole deportment, how he carried himself, his whole deportment shouted he was a man with an answer. If I'm in a meeting and I'm doing that stuff, I'm rolling my eyes, and I got a new guy there, what's it tell him? You know, that's the deal about the OxyClean, guy. If Billy Mays on that day had been drinking and he just puked in that tub, I'd have turned the channel. Right? I'd have just turned the channel. I'm not going to see that. Gross. Turn the channel. And I missed everything, right? But if I take that same thing and I move it now to my AA meeting, what's the demonstration I'm making in my AA meeting? If I go in there and I'm just puking the problem in AA, what am I telling the new people? You know, I'm there. I'm supposed to be in an AA meeting, not for me. I'm sober. Read this book, what it says about AA meetings. We meet frequently so new people may find us. That's the purpose of an AA meeting, not for me. I'm sober. We meet frequently so new people can find us. We meet so new people can have a place to bring their problem. Doesn't say we're going to let them talk about it. Just a place for them to bring it to, right? We meet so new people know where to go. They can find us. That's why we meet. It's not for me. I've been sober. So when I go to an AA meeting, if I go there and I puke the problem, it would be like me that night. If Billy had puked, I'd have turned the channel. And if I'm puking the problem in an AA meeting and there's a brand new person there, they'll just change the channel. They'll just stop listening, right? And they never have the benefit of what we got. They never have the benefit of staying there and watching the demonstrations of the men and women coming to Alcoholics Anonymous talking about the solution. So when I'm sitting in an AA meeting, I have to be conscious. Am I puking the problem or am I sharing the solution? Because I don't want anybody to miss the opportunity to have an experience like we've all had. I have to be mindful of that. But I also have to be mindful that not everybody's read this book. Not everybody cares about AA the same way that I do. So I have to have love and tolerance for those people. And I have to go to them and I have to talk to them. I really appreciate, you know, I thank you for being here today. I'm glad you're here. And I have to talk to the new people. So I have an opportunity to go to them and say, tell me why you're here. I'm glad you're here. Tell me why you're here. Find out why they're there. You know, a lot of people wander into Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys might not know this. Did you know there's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that are not alcoholic? Mm-hmm. That's a crazy thing to say. Do you know there are people that come to Alcoholics Anonymous, they get one DUI and they sentence them to AA, and they come here and they like what we do and they stay here and they go, this is pretty cool. Hell, I'm alcoholic. I'm going to stay here. And they sit on the back row and they don't do what we have to do to stay sober. They don't have to sponsor anybody. They don't have to come to retreats on the weekend, try to grow their spiritual life. They just don't drink, go to meetings, and that seems to work for them. And when they share in meetings, they talk about that. They talk about that. And it's not for me to say whether they are or they're not. They don't belong. I can't kick them out. But there are a lot of people here that, quite frankly, don't belong here. Because they came here and they like what they... How many people have been to AA meetings? You just feel better afterwards. You just go and you think, I feel better because I went to the AA meeting. I just feel better about it. Those people come, they feel better about it. Go to a speaker meeting. How can you hear somebody tell a tale of woe? I mean, I've heard speakers that, my gosh, they've just had this horrific, experience with drinking and bad things happen. And then this resurrected power got hold of them. And now they got this great life. And I'm just riveted. I'm on the edge of my chair, you know. And if you're just a guy that got one DUI and you came to AA and you hear that story, you think, man, you feel good. You can't help but feel uplifted. No matter alcoholic or not, you can't help but feel good about that. And they just come back. And so we make all kind of mistakes in AA, say stuff like this. Well, listen, just find somebody that has what you want. Well, if I'm new in AA, I want that guy in the back row with the two blondes not doing nothing. That's what I want, right? That's what we put the inmates in charge of the insane asylum. No, no, that's not what we do here. You go up to them and you talk to them and say, "Hey, tell me, why are you here?" And they tell you, and you listen, and you find out if they belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what the book Working with Others says? It says if they're not alcoholic, I can't work with them. I can't work with them because I don't have anything to share with them. Nothing. But if they are alcoholic, you know what I do? A little trick that my old sponsor taught me. Hey, around here we find it really important if you have somebody you can talk to. So I'm going to be your temporary sponsor till you find one. Hey, let's meet for coffee tomorrow. We'll look at the book. We'll start going through it. I've been temporary sponsored about 20 guys for about 30 years, right? Something like that. They don't know. They don't know they can fire you anytime. Why tell them? But people need, because they need to know, because they don't know. And so I love and tolerate, and I grow in my understanding of effectiveness by just the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that I may disagree with, that may, you know, that have a different opinion than I do, that see AA differently than me. That's okay. That's all right. There was a time where I thought, if you don't see it my way, the wall comes down forever. You're dead to me. But that's not how we do here. This particular paragraph, this one little paragraph with those four words, love and tolerance, understanding of effectiveness, flipped my whole script in Alcoholics Anonymous. Totally changed my perception of how I see people. Totally changed my perception of how I interact with the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I went through that sheriff stage, I did everything I taught. I was a great disunifier. I talked bad about groups. About 8 years ago, Lori and I got asked. They had this big anniversary at a clubhouse in Oklahoma City. And they asked Lori and I to come talk at it. And I was the Sunday morning speaker. And I knew what I had to do. I had to stand up in front of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous in my hometown and make an amends for talking bad about them, talking bad about their groups, just own it all. But you know the crazy part was when all that stuff was going on me, not one member of Alcoholics Anonymous ever said to me, "You can't come here anymore." Not one member of Alcoholics Anonymous did anything but ever treat me with kindness and love. No member of Alcoholics Anonymous did anything but that. They were the best example of what this paragraph embodies to me. The guy that should have had his ass busted, who should have been knocked upside the head the way I talk bad about AA in Oklahoma City. And I got to stand up and confess all that and thank them for how they treated me. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, this is not a place, this is not a mausoleum for saints. It's a safe haven for sinners. It's a safe haven for defective people. And what we do here is we come here wounded and broken, you know, and sometimes we get here and we find new brokenness when we're here. Sometimes, you know, I love what Bill says, Bill Cleveland, who was here last year. He says, you know, we come to AA, we're wearing the clown suit. But when we get here, we don't throw it away. We hang it in the closet because we'll need it again. Because sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've had to get the clown suit out and wear it. And just make a total ass of myself in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's okay here. Because we don't shoot our wounded as whether they're new or even if they've been here for a while. We try to nurse them back to health. It's a place here where we take broken people and broken people help them. And step 10 is the place where I learned about that. Step 10 in later sobriety is when I really began to take it to heart. When I really began an ardent practice of every day trying to the best of my ability to watch for these things. Am I being selfish? Am I being dishonest? And you know, what I have to do is I can't just be selfish in my actions. I can be selfish in my thoughts. And I'm this guy that'll say this. Well, I'm selfish in my thoughts, but I recognize that, so I don't need to tell Bob about that. Wrong. Wrong. See, I'll keep giving myself out, so before long I'll be acting selfish. Before long, I'll be copping resentments. But I'll say, well, I know I'm better than that. I won't tell Bob about that. And they start to stack up again. And I'll start accumulating them. And once again, it'll look like a hole, but it'll be a shadow because I blocked myself off again from the sunlight of the Spirit. This is a process where I need to be open channel. You know, my sponsor needs to know the bed wetting and the booger eating. He needs to know all of it. whether it happened 22 years ago or it happened last week. He needs to know about it. Because because you know who the person I lie the most to? Me. If I start selling myself, and I don't need to tell him that. Joe, I'm just thinking, I don't need to tell him that. Yes, I do. I need to talk to him about it. Man, I've been having some really selfish thoughts about people today. You know, I'm really judging the people in my home group again. You know, I'm having some troubles in my head talking about that. Why do I need to share that? The problem centers in the mind. The problem doesn't center in my actions. If it centers my action, I can just modify my behavior and go down the road. It centers in my mind, and that's the stuff I need to talk about.
So I'm going to jump to step 10 and the 12 and 12 because I really love it. I think it's one of Bill's best essays about what he was just talking about. So it says, continue to take personal inventory, and if we're wrong, promptly admit it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's when we're wrong. So I'm frequently wrong, trust me, when I wake up in the morning. But I love the first paragraph. It says, as we work the first 9 steps, we prepare for the adventure of a new life, the spiritual awakening. Mm-hmm. But when we approach step 10, we commence to put our AA way of living to practical use day by day in fair weather or foul. Then becomes the acid test. The acid test, the test is that nugget really gold? Can we stay sober, keep an emotional balance, and live to good purpose under all conditions? Next paragraph, just going to a continuous look at our assets and liabilities, and a real desire to learn and grow by this means are necessities for us. A real desire to learn and grow, that's humility. And I always jump back to step 5. What is humility? It says, to those who have made progress in AA, it amounts to a clear recognition of what and who we really are, which for me is step 6, followed by a sincere attempt to become what we could be, which is step 7. And then if you jump back to the paragraph that you were talking about, which is really cool, and this is where the transformation starts, and I'm going to try to, because I've been focusing on the number 3 the whole time. It says, you know, step 10 suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter, which is like classic. It should continue for a lifetime.
The dash.
Continue to watch for selfishness, honesty, resentment, and fear. Now he's jumped into the 4. He's jumped into the 4. He's transformed that this is going to be a lot of work. This isn't a one and done. This is how we find emotional balance. The first, when somebody new, a brand new person in AA comes to me and says, can you help me with these steps? First thing I do, I said, now it's going to be a little strange because you're not going to hear this very often. I want you to read the 10th step and the 12 and 12 for the first 30 days. Just read it out loud. Don't try to figure it out. You're not working the 10th step. This is where we live, in the 10th step. And I said, and if you can do that, it's going to help you to jump ahead to this 11th step. Because unless I take this inventory of what's going on now, unless I get down to causes and conditions about the now, there's another line I need to talk about here. But it says he talks about the emotional hangovers in the 12 and 12. Emotional hangovers, the direct result of yesterday and sometimes today's excess of negative emotion, anger, fear, jealousy, and the like. If we would live serenely today and tomorrow, we certainly need to eliminate these hangovers. But then he says, this doesn't mean we need to wander morbidly around and pass. It requires an admission and corrections of errors now. We come right back to the may you find that now. And this is in, as Joe and Charlie used to say, the squiggly lines, the italicized print. That when Bill writes these things, he's like trying to get my attention that now is where I'm supposed to be, and that's what the 10th step is. So if I correct these errors now, I'm able to jump ahead and get into that meditation process. It's really difficult if you guys understand, like this morning's meditation, he had some sound for us. He gave us, we weren't focusing on our head. This is what happens with the meditation process. If you've cleared away the wreckage of your now, you can sit in that meditation process and really absorb what's going to happen. You're going to like, your thoughts and all that stuff's going to come into you. But this morning, if you were here, there was like, he enveloped us with sound and with feeling and with a, what do you call it? A vibration that brought us all right together here in this room. And that's really what the whole meditation process is. Because when our main problem centers in our mind, and you know what, we're like sitting there, if you're new, especially, we all did, you know, you're sitting there and you're trying to meditate, you know, and you meditate, and then you're thinking about whatever, you know, and it's going to be pink or it's going to be green. It's always one of those two things. You know, oh my God, I can't meditate. Oh my God, it's like I'll never be able to do that. You know, and it's just really, oh, I can't do that. I can't do that. I can't do that. And you call your sponsor, go, I can't meditate. And he goes, you go to Starbucks in the morning before you go into the office, right? He goes, yeah. And I said, can you get right up to the counter? I go, no, there's always about 20 people in the line. He said, meditate. What? Just take that moment and just be still and just focus on the sounds. Focus on the vibrations that are going around with you. Don't focus on the negativity. And that's because me, I'd stand as Starbucks, and I've become a process guy. I go, God, I could really teach these people how to get coffee. I could really teach them how to serve people really quickly. I can't believe they're doing. Why don't they do it like this? Why are these people? Don't they know what to? They know they want to have a coffee or a latte or whatever it is, and they get up there to the counter and they stand there and go, geez, I don't know what I really want today. Fuck right, geez, you've been in the line for 10 minutes, haven't figured out, but you get there, and then I get up there and they go, how you doing? Oh, Jesus, I don't know what I want. You know, I'm like, oh, my God. It's like everybody else is the problem. But when I correct my errors now and admissions now, there's something that you find. When I first started, I think I was talking about Merrill Edward Joseph Gibson. He used to say the joy of living is our code. And I didn't like what he said because I didn't like the word joy. And I remember pulling him aside. I said, Milt, why do you have to say the joy of living? I hate that word. And it hurts me every time. He said, all right, Joe, why don't you to turn the word backwards? Spell it backwards. And I said, Y-O-J-Yosh? And he goes, yeah. And I go, what the hell does that mean? He goes, I don't know. And for years, I just used the word. I turned the word backwards, and it didn't have that sting that I had all the time. And that's what happens. When I can correct my errors now so I can get into that meditative state, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be this perfection that we're seeking. It's this conscious contact, which is an awakening with this power that's greater than myself. And that's really what we're trying to strive for. And it's not perfection, it's for a perfect ideal that it says in step 7 in the 12 of 12. We're not searching for perfection. We're searching for the perfect ideal, whatever that is. My first 5 years of sobriety, after my car broke down and I couldn't afford it, I rode a bicycle, and then I became an amateur bike rider. And I was just the perfect ideal when you're riding a 12 or 13 or an 18 speed bike is 90 revolutions per minute on a bicycle. That's why the gears are set. So you can, if you get 90 revolutions per minute when you're on a bicycle, what happens is your organs on the inside of your body are rotating and vibrating at the same 90 revolutions per minute. If you go above that, if you doubt me, try it. If you try to go 120 miles revolutions per minute, you cannot keep your ass on the seat because your internal organs are vibrating at that level and they're making your body go like this. 90 revolutions per minute is perfect, and that's really what I think we're talking about, the vibration of that 11th step, that you're getting right into that moment, right? It's not going to last the whole time, but you're going to find something because you cleared up this wreckage. You took the personal inventory so you can get into that place, that wherever. Not the whenever, the wherever possible. And I think that's what we're talking about. We're the steps, when you look at them, like by the 10th, if you look at a step, if 10 steps and 12 steps, at the top, when you get older, it's really tough to get to those top 10. But all of a sudden, you get out of breath, and then you stop, you collect yourself in step 10, so you can actually get into that step 11. And then the fourth dimension of existence happens in that 12th step. When we turn our resolutely turn ourselves towards who we can be of maximum service, that's the ultimate goal. Bob and Zach used to always say, a lot of people talk about the fourth and the fifth steps and how it's so hard to do. But he said, probably the one thing that is knocking on the door and say, hey, I was wrong. Look, I was wrong. I'm doing that. I'm already doing the 10th step when I'm doing the 9th step. I'm wrong. I'm not promptly admitting it. I'm trying to clean up my records of the past so I can enjoy this moment today, this now that's going on. And it seems like a lot of work, and that's why he always talks about the seemingly, what is the seemingly? It's like, oh my God, but if I don't talk about it, Bob, Ken, I got some attitude adjustment going on here, and I'm afraid to tell you about it because I think you're going to think less of me. And the one thing your sponsor is going to go, man, I'm so glad that you came and talked to me about this, you know? And you release that stuff, and then you can, your attitude has changed, you're through the storm, and all of a sudden you're just like, so this is the book that we were talking about. If you guys, we mentioned it, Stumbling in the Right Direction. If you want to just take a peek at it, it's simplicity. Simplicity. That's all that these guys, the great gurus in AA talk about, simplicity. But this 10th step, it's like, it's that one that we want to like, oh, but continue. Four times he says the word continue. And all the great AA historians always talk about, he never used the same word in the same paragraph. He never did that in a lot of his writings, but in this 10th step, he's trying to drive home that this is what it's all about. This is emotional sobriety. This is about growing up. This is taking this childish, emotionally sensitive, and grandiose person and trying to get him to be happy, joyous, and free. If we can do those things, but resistance, what is it? Dogs are
rebellion. Dogness every step of the way.
Rebellion. Oh, rebellion. Just think about when you were a little kid. Ah!
Have a fit,
you know. And then you're 1 year sober, you're 2 years sober, and you go, oh, I don't want to do this. I want to do this thing. But if you can get into this 10th step, if you can live in this moment, if you can live in the and correct these things now, wow. Our inventory enables us to settle with the past. When this is done, we are really able to leave it behind. When our inventory is carefully taken, we have made peace with ourselves. The conviction follows that tomorrow's challenges can be met as they come. The alcoholic lives in ungrounded and unfounded fear. Ask me what's going on. I don't know, but it's going to happen. I know. You know, and if I can release that ungrounded and unfounded fear, the tomorrow's challenges can be met as they come.
Yeah. You know, I'm a guy that, you guys ever see the old show back in the 70s, Kung Fu? You guys ever watch that?
Weed Hopper.
Right?
David Carradine, yeah. Little grasshopper. That's just, so remember that? They would go to their whatever, and they'd put on those candles, and they sit in the lotus position on those cushions. And I come to AA, and I have an old idea about meditation. That's what that is. So I come here, and when people say, hey, you pray and meditate, I go, oh, yeah. Yeah. So I lie in AA. That's what I am. I'm a liar in AA. I pray, but I don't meditate. You know why? I'm a tree stump. I can't get in that position. I can't do that. And so I don't. And so when I had my crisis in Alcoholics Anonymous at 9 years sober, when somebody said to me, tell me about your 10, 11 step practice, I'm at a crossroads, and I told the truth. I can't meditate. And they said, what do you mean by that? You can't meditate. And I told them the Kung Fu story. And they said, well, that's certainly a way to meditate, but it's not the only way to meditate. And this was like, really? Because I'm not willing to explore. Right? I have a fixed idea, and I'm dying on this hill. This is it. I'm dying on this hill. And he said, no, there's some other things. There's other ways to meditate. He said, have you ever heard of contemplative meditation? I go, no, never heard of that. He said, oh. And so he turned me on to this little book by Anthony DeMello. He said, hey, I want you to do this. He said, this book is really easy. He said, just tell you, it's a little story. It's called 1 Minute Wisdom. He said, it just gives you a little story. He said, then I want you to read that story, and I want you to set for another, it takes less than a minute to read, but give yourself 5 minutes total, read it, and then just sit and think about the lesson that little story talks about. And I thought, I can do that. And so I started doing that. I bought that book, downloaded it on my iPad, and started it. And about a week or so, I got curious about that. And I would listen, I would read the story, I'd think about the lesson. I go, how does this correspond with the big book? Where can I find that lesson, that principle in the book? So it got me in the book. I'm trying to figure it out there. And then so I'm talking to our buddy Steve Lamb. I met Lamb about this time. And I'm telling him about, we're talking about meditation. He says, you know, I have a list of books. I go, a list? He goes, yeah, I have a list. And so my wife is listening to this conversation. So he says, oh, yeah, I have a list of books that I have accumulated over the years. And she says, I'd like that list. I said, I'd like that too. And so Steve sends me the list. And so what happens for me is that I started this five-minute deal. Now it's kind of stretched to about 10 minutes. I'm now seeking this other information. Steve gives me his book. I buy one of them. And so I start reading it. And sometimes when you read these meditation books, when you read these spiritual books, they'll refer to other books. Well, I got to have that right now. I mean, I got to have that right now. And so I was buying all these books, and Lori finally came in when they had like 30 books on the kitchen table. And she says, when can I have my table back? I need my table back, right? So I got to have that back. So my sponsor started having me buying them, downloading my iPad so I could take them with me when I travel. Made perfect sense to me. And so I started doing that. But what started happening is I started getting spiritually thirsty. Because you can get spiritually thirsty here. You can get on fire spiritually, like when you're new and you're going to go save everybody, like non-drinkers. You're even going to help them, right? You're going to help those people. You know, problem drinkers, you've got some work for them too. So, but I started getting, and so my 5 minutes turned to 10, now 15. Now I'm an hour. I'm getting up an hour earlier because I've been like in 15 books I'm reading. And I've got a footnote, so I got to go find it over here. So I'm glued in on this stuff. And it's my experience that the people who come to me and say, I'm having trouble. I ask them the same thing that got me. Tell me about your 10 and 11 practice. And they send, routinely they say the same thing. I pray, but that's about it. Well, if I'm wrong, you know, I'll promptly admit that. But they're not watching. And they've let all this stuff accumulate on them again. They now have this shadow, which looks like a hole, but they've blocked themselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit again. And so when that happens to me, I give them the deal. So let me share what's my experience, because that's all I have to share is my experience. Let me tell you what happened to me. And I just send them to the same book that I got. And I say to them, if you can do 5 minutes, it's 5 minutes more than you've been doing. So just 5 minutes. And invariably what happens to the people that ask me about that, the same thing happens to them. They start reading. And they start saying, I wonder what the book says about that. And then they go to the book and they think, what are these other books? And they come to me and I say, I've got a list.
Yeah,
and then they get the list and now here they are. And their wife's complaining about the kitchen table, all that stuff. So I just shortcut it and say, just put it on your Kindle. It'll be a lot better if you just do it that way. But what's happened to me from all that is that, you know, I talked earlier about Alcoholics Anonymous. What has happened to me is it smoothed the edges of my life off. When I take time in the morning to pray and meditate, you know, there are people in this world who get up every day. They get up, they might watch the news, drink their coffee, get in their car, they go to work, and they have an idea about how just they go to work at work, and stay at work. They didn't need anybody to tell them that. They didn't have to burn their life to the ground to have somebody say, listen, when you get to work today, that's what everybody else does. Don't come home and share with us that you did 8 full hours today. We know. Right? We want a ticker tape parade for brushing our teeth, I swear to God. Right? I mean, we do. I need applause for taking the trash out every week, man. But there are people in this world who just routinely get up and they just go about their day. I need an hour to get ready to go out. I've got to get prepared because if I don't do this, I know what my life was like, because what happens is I get back self-directed again. Self-directed. That's why it's important. Bob, I'm having these thoughts about I'm selfish and I'm having bad thoughts, because when I just pass that off and say, I don't need to talk to him about that, he's busy, right? He's busy, he sponsors half the country. I don't need to tell him about that. I don't need to bother that. I see it, I recognize it. When I do that, what happens is I become self-directed again. I put myself in charge of my own sobriety again. And I'm not supposed to be in charge of my own sobriety. That's why I have a sponsor, because I need direction. I don't need self-direction. I need direction from somebody. I need somebody that I can talk to and download and tell, hey, I'm having thoughts about it. Or, you know, Lori's just kind of on my nerves or whatever. I need to share those things. I don't need to let them accumulate. But when I do that, what is it? It's in the 10th or 11th step in the 12 and 12, prayer meditation. When logically interrelated, right? Inventory coupled with prayer, when when logically interrelated, 10 and 11, make for an unshakable foundation. You know what people like us need? Unshakable foundations. Right? I need an I think it's in step 10 or 11. An unshakable, and that's what 10 and 11 give for me. If I'm in an ardent practice of staying in the now, if I'm doing the clearing the wreckage, I need an unshakable foundation. Because you know what I've had my whole life? Sandy. I've had a sand-based foundation. Just all wiggly and squiggly. I need something I can stand on here. Prayer and meditation, doing this 10-step work, clearing away, just giving myself a little bit of time. I had a guy come to me one time. He says, you know, I just really struggle in the morning. I struggle in the morning of meditating. I said, well, do you pray in the morning? He said, yeah, I pray in the morning, but I have a real struggle meditating. I said, well, could you do it at like noon? Could you do it in line at Starbucks? Could you do it when you get home in the afternoon? Well, yeah, I could do that. I said, well, okay, let's try that. Totally changed his script, right? He prays in the morning, meditates in the afternoon when he can. I was that guy who used to chase you down when you talk about the 11th step and you call it the 10th step. Today, I don't chase people down anymore. In my head, I do. In my head, I do. But I don't do it literally. But what I listen for is this. Are they getting the spiritual benefit from the exercise? Who cares what they call it, right? Who cares if I'm saying the 10-step nightly inventory? Who cares? Who cares? The guys that I sponsor, I'm going to get them dialed in on what it is. Who cares? If I listen to that gal and she's talking about the 10-step nightly inventory and she's having an incredible experience with that, who am I to go up and say, well, you know, you're doing it wrong. You're saying it wrong. That's none of my business. If she's having the benefit from the spiritual exercise, good for her. Who cares what she calls it? Who cares if you're saying, well, I had to go back and do another 4-step, I'm 15 years sober, and you're thinking, well, that's just a 10-step. Who cares? Who cares what you call it? Are you getting the spiritual benefit from the exercise? Good for you. Good for you, because you're at least engaged and you're doing it. And I think that's the key here. Am I engaged into action doing these things? Because if I'm doing those things, then I'm really involved in the essence of what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. I'm involved in this, what 10-11 is about. I'm engaged no matter what I call it.
So it says, we liked AA all night, and this is step 11 of the 12 and 12. We were quick to say that it had done miracles, but we recoiled from meditation and prayer as obstinately as the scientist who refused to perform a certain experiment lest it prove his pet theory wrong. The ego enters into meditation. Further down it says, when we turn away from meditation and prayer, we likewise deprive our minds, emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. Then the next page says, the direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit. But when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life.
Yes.
Now that we may be granted a glimpse in the ultimate reality, which is God's kingdom. And seek ye first, the kingdom of God and good things and righteousness will come to you out of the Bible. That was where that term first things first came from on that sign. We don't see them hardly anymore. But seek that kingdom of God, which is right here and right now. And it's so in my own practice, this is what, so for 35 years, I learned this prayer from Jack Brennan, who was an AA speaker. And before I get out of bed in the morning, I just lie there in the bed and I say, I seek my God in the morning when my day is at its best, and this presence comes like sunrise, like a glory in my breast. All day long this presence lingers, all day long it stays with me, and I sail in perfect calmness or a very troubled sea. So I think I know the secret learned from many a troubled ways. I seek God in the morning so I can have him throughout the day. And before I throw that cover off, I say that prayer, and then I usually go take a pee, and then I use an insight timer for my meditation. It's a great little free app you can get, and it's just, I sit there and I try to do 10 to 20 minutes right away. I do that meditation. I just clear away whatever's going on, and then what I do is I sit down, and that's why I brought, I, 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 I I love talking about the books that I read because sometimes it irritates people because that's not conference-approved literature. You can't be talking about that in the AA meeting. And I go, do you know what conference-approved means? This just gives me a little bit of power. And they go, well, it should be. You shouldn't be reading that. I go, conference-approved means that the conference approved it so AA, World Service, can produce it, and then they can sell it. It doesn't mean that I can't read it or I can't share it with people in here. Sometimes people get so possessive of what this. So then what I do is after I've done my meditation, I read some sort of spiritual. So me and Cliff were talking about it yesterday, and I get back to my room, and he sends me the list. He sends me the list that he's doing right now. I read seven books I read seven books in the course of a day, and one of them is the 12 and 12 in the big book. I have that in my book. But then there's always these other spiritual things or all these books. And I don't read a paragraph or a couple of pages. This is what I do. I read those couple of pages, and I get a new idea out of something that I'm reading. Then I pick up the transmission process, the pen, and I open I have my journal right here, and it's just a journal, and I just sit there and I start to write, stream of consciousness. I put the date at the top, and then I say, good morning, God. I say, good morning, God. And then I go, I don't go back and read it over, but I get this centeredness, this joy. And all of a sudden, I wake up at 3:30 in the morning every morning. Every morning I just wake up at 3:30. And there's amazing things that happen that early. Sometimes I don't get moving right away, but I get up and then I just embrace the day. And I feel so good. And usually if the same way Cliff was saying, if somebody's coming to me, especially people that I'm working with, I don't try to sponsor people that I don't sponsor because I might hurt them. Mm-hmm. But the people that I sponsor, I would say, okay, talk about the 10 and 11 first, and it's usually, is there something in that past amends that you haven't done yet? Just before, I was waiting for Ray to pick me up at the hotel yesterday morning, and my sponsee, God bless him, he got some really bad news, and he might not be with us, and he calls me a lot. He was angry at his wife again. God dang it, she pissed me off again. And I go, I remember we had a conversation about this quite a while ago. Who does she remind you of again? She reminds me of my grandfather, who's been gone how many years? A long time. And have we made amends with him? No, I'm not willing to. Oh. So you're lashing out at her because of something that he did to you. And he's 65 years old. He goes, oh, Joe, why did we have to go there?
You started it.
You asked me for help, man, and my job is to uncover what you can't see, and it really is okay. You got to get down. You got to fix that so you can get back to this 10th step. So you can get back to this 11th step. So you can be of maximum service to these guys that are calling you and asking you for help. If you're consumed with self, you're not going to be able to turn to somebody else. You're not going to be able to give them this gift that you've been freely given. And it really is. It's just, it's, you know, and he's been doing the writing, and I got another guy that lives over in the Netherlands is struggling, and I said, let's do this stuff. And I never tell anybody to do something that I won't do myself. I can't do those things. It's just impossible. Oh, this is go to 90 meetings in 90 days. A lot of people just throw that around, like, well, Jesus, why don't you go to 90 meetings in 90 days and just kind of like leave me alone, right? I sponsored a guy years ago. He doesn't come around anymore, but he was a heroin addict but a bad alcoholic. And he went out one day and coated blue on heroin, and then he came back and he says, I need your help. Okay, man, let's go to a meeting. And he says, and we'll figure out what we're going to do. And we're at a meeting, and he says, what are we going to do? I said, God just told me what we're going to do. And he goes, I'm so excited, young kid. He says, what are we going to do? I says, we're going to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And his face just went, oh, God, you got to be kidding me. And I said, you know what? I said, I've never been given that direction, and I've never given that direction. And I said, and I can't give a direction to somebody that's something that I haven't done. So we're going to go to 90 meetings in 90 days together. He said, you're kidding me. I said, no, we're going to do that. You want to know something? I've never given that direction again.
That's a lot of meetings.
Unless you're doing it, it's a lot of work, man. It's a lot of work. So, find the space, find the place. Are we done? Is that what that was? Yeah.
We're done? Okay. Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
And our next session is 9:30.